Stone Chumash. Parsha B'Shalach is on page 366. Again, like we usually do, we'll just try to go a very brief overview of the whole Parsha, even though the Parsha really centers around the Shira. It centers around, Az Yashir, which we're going to talk about a little bit. But just to give a little bit of a brief overview of the entire Parsha, we know that, of course, this whole Parsha, the whole B'Shalach is really a bridge. If you go through the Parsha and you try to ask yourself, you're a Parshan, and you want to figure out, like, what connects these stories? You got the beginning, and they're going roundabout, and then we have the, Amalek at the end, and the Mun in the middle, and then Az Yashir. What connects them? And it seems very disjointed, this Parsha. In reality, though, B'Shalach is the bridge between last week in Bo and next week in Yisro. So in last week's Parsha, we left. We're done. The last three Makos, Makas Mechoros, Paro saying, get out of here. The Karban Pesach, the Jews are done. They're on their way out. Next week is the Torah. So in between the leaving of Mitzrayim and the getting of the Torah, there was a lot of learning that had to get done. Like if you didn't study the whole semester and now you're cramming for the final, this is what's happening in B'Shalach. And there's a lot of things that have to be gained in B'Shalach. So that's why, for example, you have the beginning of the parsha. We know Vahi B'Shalach Paro Esa'am, the Pasuk Yugim, Pasuk Yud Zayin. The Jew, Hashem sends them, V'lonachem Elokim Derech Eretz Plishtim. Hashem doesn't want to send them straight. Rather, he sends them around, right? You can actually travel from Egypt straight to Israel, and you don't ever have to cross a body of water. You don't have to cross any body of water. Yet, Hashem sends them around. Why does Hashem send them around? So there's a number of opinions. Number one, the Ibn Ezra says, Hashem had to see that in this generation, their spirits were crushed. They're not ready to fight. They're not ready to wage a war. The moments out of Mitzrayim, they need some time. The Malbim, for example, says they needed time to develop courage to wage a war. Even though they are physically redeemed, the Jews have a slave mentality still. It weighs on them. Psychologically, they are not free people yet. In fact, they're probably not free people, as we'll talk about in a little bit, what happens at Kriyas Yamsuf. They are not freed mentally. So to think they're going to come out and just say, all right, give us the Torah and let's go. Hashem says they're absolutely not ready. So that's why the beginning of the parsha, why do we care how they got to Israel? Because Hashem is training them. Hashem is training them to begin to understand what it means to be this chosen, this chosen nation. We know that it 2 weeks ago in Va'ira, Velo Shamal Moshe, they didn't listen. Now all of a sudden they have to become dependent upon God. That is a process. That is a process. There's an amazing comment in the Meshach Chachma. The Meshach Chachma says, he says, what would have happened? Let's play it out. The Jews get out of Mitzrayim. They take the first, Dreamliner. Everybody gets priority boarding. We're there. It's great. We land. Everybody gets off the plane. What's in Israel at this point in history? What's in Israel right now is not, there's no Mamila. There's no Ben Yehuda. There's no Kotel. There's no restaurants besides the spirituality. There's not even the physical stuff. What do we have in Israel right now? It is just Avodah Zarah. It is nations of the world that worship Avodah Zarah. And if you took the Jews out of Egypt, says the Meshach Chachma, and you transplanted them straight into Israel 3 days later, they would be done for. Toast. They wouldn't have lasted. They were not really strong. They didn't have enough spiritual fortitude yet to last. So the Meshach Chachma says, had the Jews gone straight to Israel, which was full of Meshach Chachma says of Avodah Zarah and everything else, they would not have been able to uproot them. Rather, they would have just been swallowed up alive. And that's why as you continue to look through the Parsha, everything that happens in this Parsha is all about the Jews learning to trust in God. It is going roundabout to give them more time. It's why we have the Mun. Why do we have the Mun? Because the Jews, for 210 years, they were slaves. Now, as much as they were slaves, the food was given to them. All of a sudden, they have to learn about God. Dependence upon God. Every day I'm going to go out. I am not, we'll talk about it a little bit, but the Pasuk tells us when it comes to the Mun, that it was a Laman Anaset. It was a test. Would they trust in God? And you'll notice, which is very interesting, when the other Parshios, when the Jews complain in Bamidbar, then we get upset at them. Come on, Jews. in this week's parsha and Bishalach, when they complain, we're not upset at them. How else would a nation that has been slave for 210 years responded? They responded all the way that they knew. They didn't know any better. So therefore, Hashem is training them. Hashem is getting them ready. Bishalach is training camp. Every sports team has training camp. So we have to go through Bishalach to get to Yisro. The Pasuk tells us, as we continue a little bit, that after they go round about, the Pasuk says, Vayazev Elokim Asav Derech HaMidbar Yam Sof, it leads them around about, V'chamushim, Alu B'nei Yisrael Me'eretz Yitzrayim. Now, what does it mean, V'chamushim? So usually we think that chamushim is, there's a number of interpretations. So Rashi first says it means armed. It means armed, so that later when they fight the battle against Amalek, no one's going to say like, hey, all of a sudden, you know, like somehow in movies, the action guy somehow manages to find the weapon at the last second and it has one bullet left. What an amazing thing. The Jews are armed. They take weapons. That's how they fight. But Rashi says another interpretation. Rashi actually tells us that v'chamushim, in his second interpretation, means davar v'chamushim echad mechamisho yatsu. Only, Rashi says, only one at, right, a four-fifths of the Jews do not leave Mitzrayim. Four-fifths of the Jews do not leave Mitzrayim. Now, there's a number of other interpretations of a chamushim. For example, Rabbi Yonasan ben Uziel, his Targum Yonasan, says chamushim from the word chamesh, that each family left with five children. Each family with five children. And finally, there's a Targum Yerushalmi that says it doesn't mean weapons, it means good deeds. So you have either it means one-fifth of the Jews left, they left with five children, or they left with good deeds. So Rabbi Yosef of Salat, who is known as the Be'er Yosef, so he suggests the following idea. It's a great idea he has. He says, if 80% of the parents died in Egypt, who took care of those children? Right? The parent, the four-fifths that died were not the children, it was parents. So if 80% of the parents died, who took care of their children? So he says, well, the 80-20 rule. The other 20, it's always the 20% that's helping out. So in addition to their own children, 20% of the parents who lived took care of 80% of the other children. Right? That's the 80-20 divide in philanthropy. Right? 20% of people give 80% of the money. Volunteer work, 20% of the people do 80% of the work. Right? And when it comes to complaints, you should know if you're ever working in any organization, especially a Jewish organization, 20% of the people take up 80% of your time. Not anybody here. Obviously not anybody here. I'm referring to other people. And if you think I'm referring to you, I'm definitely not. Whoever else you think I'm referring to, I'm probably referring to. But the Be'er Yosef says that the Jewish people begin their journey in the desert. What do they do? All of these answers combine together. It means they took each one that left took care of five sets of children plus their own. They took care of everybody else's children. And that's what it means. They were armed with good deeds. So yes, one-fifth of the Jews left, but they took care of four-fifths of the children. And that's what it means. They were armed. There is so much to talk about. How when the Jews leave Mitzrayim, the night of Pesach, and moving forward, it is foundationally built in the care we have for other Jews. Think about the Karban Pesach. You could not eat the Karban Pesach alone. You had to have somebody else there. Rabbi Soloveitchik says, it's an odd thing that a person gets out of prison, his first meal had to be shared with others. That's what we did. We shared it with others. There's a lot of compassion. That's Pesach night called Divchen Yesei V'Yecho. We open up our door. We are going to start being free Jews by inviting others, and that's how we show that we're free. So the Psukim continue that, of course, Moshe Rabbeinu, Moshe promises, since he was the leader, the Sfarno says he is the one who takes out the bones of Yosef, and they're now ready to travel. We're going to skip ahead a little bit because I'm going to come back to what happens in the middle here. But we know that at the end of the parsha, after Kriyas Yamsuf, so we get to the Mun, and that again, the test of the Mun was this is a slave mentality. This is a slave mentality. They had to learn how to break that mold, right? So we learn about the man. We learn about the source. Of course, this week's parasha, Perek Tav Zayin, Pasuk Chafei, the Pasuk tells us, Vayar Moshe Chlu Hayom, Ki Shabbos Hayom Hashem, Hayom Lom Simtsu Basadeh. The Torah says you have to have the word Hayom three times. A lot of good Shabbos stuff here. You have Lecha Mishnah on this week's parasha. That's how you know you had to. You have to have two challahs on Shabbos. We collected double an erev Shabbos. You have to have three meals on Shabbos because it says Hayom Hayom Hayom. That's why we cover the challah. Why do we cover the challah at Kiddush? So everybody's gonna say because we don't want it to be embarrassed that we're doing Kiddush first, and that's definitely one of the reasons. The other reason is the challah. The mun was covered by dew. Now the mun was actually, it was dew and then mun and then dew, which is why we have a challah board, challah, and then a challah cover. So I'll tell you something. In my eighth grade Gemara shir, we call it a Gemara shir. It's not a long Gemara class. In my eighth grade Gemara shir, I was introducing to them higher level Gemara thinking, what I call lumdus. I could not call it lumdut. I tried as hard as I could, but it did not flow off my tongue. So I went back to lumdus. So I said to them, when you create what's called a chakira in halacha, two ways of viewing something, you need to have what's called a nafkamina, a practical application. And Rabbi Gold, my great colleague and chaver in Hillel Torah, his example we always give to students is a spork. You know a spork? A spoon that's on a fork, right? You know what a spork is? I imagine we know what a spork is. Maybe you don't, and you need to get out a little more. So is it a fork or a spoon? So who cares? So it matters where you set it on the Shabbos table. Where you set it on the Shabbos table. So why do I care what the reason for covering the challah is? Because if it's just for, I don't want it to be embarrassed, I could uncover it the moment I'm finished Kiddush. I'm done. It's not going to be embarrassed anymore. But if it's because the challah itself is covered by dew, I really should not uncover it until I'm ready to eat it. Anyway. That's all source. All that stuff about Shabbos is in this week's parsha. Okay, so we have the man, and of course we have the battle about Amalek, and there's a lot more to talk about in this week's parsha. But I want to go back. I want to go back to Perek Yudalit, and I want to talk about Shira. I want to talk about this idea. We call it Shabbos Shira as Yashir. The question we have to answer is what happens, right? What happens in this week's parsha that results in Shira, right? Shira clearly is a higher level of song. It's something unique. It's something special. Something that happens that they sang something unique and different. So let's just understand for a little bit what led up to Az Yashir. So we know that the Jews have escaped, right? And the Torah tells us v'chizakti es leparo v'erdav achrehem, that Paro now has a change of heart. Whatever the reason is, maybe he thought they were going to come back, and now they're not coming back. Maybe he realizes that maybe they're turning around, so maybe I've defeated God. That's what Rav says. But the Ramban says that Paro believed the three-day plan. 3 days you're going to go, and you're going to come back. But he decides, that he's been traumatized, and he decides now he's going after, Hashem has to harden his heart, and he's going after them. So Paro prepares himself for battle. We know that he takes himself. Rashi says he goes at it. He leads the charge. He is ready to go, and he begins to chase the Jews. He begins to chase the Jews, and the Jews all of a sudden realize what in the world is happening. We left Mitzrayim. It was great. The Egyptians were beat up. We went through all of the Makos. We then, Makos Bechoros, just completely decimated them. 3 days, nobody chased us. And all of a sudden, it's 3 days later, and we hear the chariots of the Egyptians are moving. And the Jews begin to panic. They begin to panic. In fact, the Pasuk tells us, Uparo hikriv. Paro comes close, and Pasuk Yon and Perek Yodalid, Vayisu b'nei sos, they lift up their eyes, V'hinei Mitzrayim, Noseh achareim, here comes Mitzrayim. Vayir'u me'od, Vayitzakwa b'nei sol Hashem. They get very nervous and they cry out to Hashem, and then they say, Hanu, Hamibli ain't Kvarim. You took us out of Egypt to die here. What? There are no graves in Mitzrayim. This is it. This is our end. This is where we're going to be finished. All of that for nothing. So the Ramban says there are two groups. Some are davening and some are saying, come on, God, I can't believe this. And it's also possible that it's the same group. Meaning, look at the psukim. Paro's coming. They see it. They lift up their eyes. All right. Vayirumod, vayitzaku. What should you do in a time of crisis and, you know, trauma? Daven. Turn to the sitter. Open the tehillim. And they do. They close the sitter, hoping that when the sitter closes, the Egyptians will be made into a puff of smoke. And they close the tehillim. The tehillim, you know, rally is over. And guess what? They're still coming. And now they begin to say, well, what was the point of that davening, God? We davened. It didn't work. Now we're upset. And this is really where the Jews learn about tefillah. The Jews have to understand when we need something, we cry out to God. That's why we were saved in Mitzrayim. We cried out. Hashem heard us crying out to him. And sometimes we cry and we don't get what we want. And as Rabbi Sachs used to say, no is also an answer. So the Jews, they daven and it didn't work. And now they get angry. Now they get upset. Right? So they turn and they say, what's happening? And Paro is getting closer, closer and closer. And Moshe Rabbeinu is davening and davening. Vayomer Moshe la'am al tiro. Don't worry. You're going to see the Hashem's salvation. Hashem is going to fight with you. Hashem yilachem lachem atem tacharishon. So what now we get Az Yashir. Right? Now all of a sudden the Jews go in. And the Jews, you know, obviously we know what happens. The Mitzrim coming after them. The Jews are saved. The Mitzrim are not. Az Yashir Moshe v'nei Yisrael. So what happens? Why could they not have sang this kind of song earlier? Were they not thrilled when the water turned into blood? Were they not ecstatic when frogs croaked the entire night and bothered them? Were they not, you know, so happy when during Choshech, the Mitzrim were terrified, and there we are, stealing the gold and the silver. But all of a sudden now, we heard no Az Yashir. We heard nothing else, and all of a sudden now we hear this Az Yashir. So the question is, what happens? What happens? I would like to share a number of ideas as to what exactly is transpiring that's making them want to say Az Yashir. Now, the simple, you know, approach actually is that they really were afraid. And if, until now, they did not feel comfortable. They did not feel safe. They did not feel secure. Why not? Because even though we left Egypt, Egypt hasn't left us. And we know they're going to come after us, and Paro's strong, and we were slaves for 210 years. So as long, you know, in fact, if you look at the psukim, Tosfos makes a startling comment. Tosfos says, if you look at the psukim, they started in Sukkos, and after Az Yashir, they're in Sukkos. So if you look in the Gemara, Tosfos says, what happens? They went in a semicircle. They went in a semicircle. In fact, they actually started where they, you know, like they didn't want to ask for directions, right? They actually ended up where they started. It's a comment of Tosfos. So why is that? The only reason they went into the water was just to lure the Egyptians in. And in fact, the Jews had to see the Egyptians be Sfas Hayam. Right? They saw the Egyptians die. Had the Egyptians gone into the sea but not come out and we didn't see the dead bodies, we would not have been comforted. We had to lure them in, destroy them, and then see them dead, and then we can say, Az Yashir. Only when we felt completely secure, we're ready to move on. Until we had that slave mentality, they were our masters. We were not broken of that, you know, of that ownership that they had over us. And only after we go through, and only after they die, only after we see them die, then they can say Az Yashir. Right? So that is really, as you look through the psukim, that seems to be the understanding. We only feel safe after we see them die. But the other way to look at this story is that something actually happens at Kriyas Yamsuf that transforms them. Go, if you look in the psukim, there is a dialogue between Hashem and Moshe. The Jewish people are standing on the banks of the Yamsuf. The waves are in front of them. The vengeful Egyptian army is behind them. So Moshe begins to daven, and Hashem responds, "Vayomer Hashem Moshe, Matitzak Eli, Daber B'nei Yisrael V'Yisau." So again, that pasuk, Matitzak Eli. Why are you crying out to me? Daber al b'nei Yisrael v'yisa'u. Just speak to them, and they should go forth. What does that mean? What does that mean? Here we are, they're crying, they're davening, and Hashem says, stop davening. Tell them they should travel. Says the Meshech Chachma, until now, the Jews had followed Moshe like sheep following a shepherd. Yes, they had doubts in Moshe's ability and leadership, but at the end of the day, he was the shepherd. They believed in him, and they were following him into the sea. And here, God turns to Moshe, and he says, Hashem, the Jews have clearly demonstrated their willingness to follow. They followed you out of Egypt. Right? Hashem tells us, right, the greatest thing that you have ever done for me, Hashem says, so to speak, is that you followed me in the desert. That's all that I needed. So Moshe says, God, here we are. They followed you. And Hashem's saying, why are you davening? The reason I am not going the next step is not because you're not davening. That's not what's holding up the process. You have to go in first. Let them go in and you follow them. God says to Moshe, I need a nation of Israel that has initiative, that demonstrates the strength to do what's right, to take the reins of their lives, even if their leader is not leading the charge. So 7 days out of Egypt, the Jews are asked to sort of walk in the sea before Moshe Rabbeinu. And that says, Rabbi Aaron Soloveitchik, that's Shira. He says the following, he writes that Shira is appropriate only when you attain a victory. But to be a victor, you must actively participate in the struggle. So why is it that until now they never sang Shira? Of course they were very happy. Of course they sang Simchat Tov Mazel Tov. They sang, they had, kumzitzes during the Makos. They were thrilled that Hashem was destroying the Egyptians. They were so happy, and I'm sure they sang Hallel. But Shira is different. Shira means initiative. Shira means taking the first step in. Shira means I am an active part of this process. And this is the first time they did it. They did it with Karban Pesach still in Egypt, but now they do it as the part of their own redemption. And that's what Shira is, this culmination of their work and their struggle. And after they cross the Yam Suf, even if they end up on the same side, they sang Shira because they summoned that, inner strength to walk into the waves. And that's the story we know. Right? Nachshon ben Aminadav, somebody had to be the one to say, God, I am following you. I have faith in you, and here is my undying commitment that I'm going to walk into the water. And we feel like we feel Nachshon's nervousness. He steps in a little. We know the story. Doesn't split. It's his ankles and his knees and his thigh and his chest all the way. They could have pulled him out. And as the water rises to his neck, the sea splits. And what does it say about Nachshon ben Aminadav? Zacha Yehuda la'asos memshalo b'Yisrael. He gets this role of malchus, of leadership, because that's what it means to be a leader. So either, number one, approach to understanding what happens in this parsha, why what they go through results in Shira, is either because they could only sing this when they felt secure. And really, this is a lesson for us throughout history, that when we realize that we might not ever feel totally secure, but we understand that HaKadosh Baruch Hu is protecting us, and the Jews finally felt that after the Kriyas Yamsa. Or it's this idea of Aaron Soloveitchik, it means initiative. Jews, we had to take that first step. Enough of Moshe leading us, we are going to step in, we are going to go ahead. There's another thing as well about understanding Shira that I think is not just about what happens to the Jews, but something about who we are as Jews. All of these parshios, Bo and Bishalach, it's the forming not just of the Jewish nation, but of the Jewish person. How we understand what happens at the Yam Suf, the faith that we had, the connection that we felt, right? We saw more of God than Yechezkel saw. So this is about becoming a Jew. We know that when the Malachim, when the Gemara tells us in Sanhedrin that at Kriyas Yam Suf, the Malachim wanted to sing Shira, and Hashem stops them. And the Gemara tells us, Masa Yodai Tovim Bayam, you know, my creations, the Egyptians are going to, you know, are going to sink. Batem Omrim Shira. And you're going to want to sing. You can't do that. That's not nice. It's not nice. So the question is, at the very same time, the Jews are singing Shira. And yet, that's so important. That's like the most, you know, important moment in Jewish history. We say it in davening. What's the difference? Why does Hashem disapprove of the Malachim, but approve of us singing Shira? And Rav Shimon Schwab explains a fundamental difference that we understand, we learn from this story between angels, Malachim, and mankind. This is one of the most important things that we could be in understanding what it means to be a Jew. He says, an angel is capable of only one objective at a time. We know that when all the Malachim come to Avram, each one has their own mission. Rav Schwab calls that Barchad Shlichus, one mission. And because angels can only focus on one mission, they can't express joy while also recognizing the pain of the Mitzrim. They literally cannot do that. They don't have the capacity to experience joy and sorrow at the same time. Humans, Rav Schwab says, are very, very different. A human being, he says, is bar beis shlichus. We can do two things, multiple missions. We can be a person who can embrace, who can reconcile conflicting emotions. We can have sorrow and joy, fear and happiness, all of those at the same time. Right? Think about a scary movie. Right? It's a roller coaster of emotions. We have fear, exhilaration, and that's the difference between Jews and Bnei Yisrael and Malachim. That's why we could sing Shira, but the Malachim cannot. We can sing, thank you Hashem for what you did to us, and we can also recognize the tragic drowning of Hashem's own creations. And this idea of what Rav Schwab talks about is far beyond just like, can I be happy and sad at the same time? In 1954, Rav Huttner was sent a letter by one of his students. This student felt that Rav Huttner was one of the most magnificent, unique teachers we've had in the 20th century in terms of his blending of learning and his care for the individual and, you know, his everything that went into his, you know, his limud and what the Torah that he gives us is very, very special. So a student wrote to Rav Huttner who said that he felt that there was this contrast between who he was, you know, at work and at home versus who he was in the Beis Medrash. He felt that he was leading a double life. He had just left the yeshiva and he was working in the business world. And he felt like these were two parts of his life and he was in this like constant, you know, schizophrenic conflict. So Rav Huttner rejects his student's concerns and he says to him the following. He says, if you rent a room in a hotel, right, and you also rent a room in a house, and you switch off between the two, that person is a double life. But if you rent one house with many rooms, it's just one house, but it has many rooms. In other words, the mere fact that you engage, we all engage in multiple activities, does not mean we live double lives. We can work, we can learn, we can play, you know, we can play golf. And we could still be a great Oved Hashem. Doesn't mean we're living a double life, he says. It means we're living a broad life. You know, as modern Orthodox Jews, we try to do this. And it's very hard sometimes. We try to live a broad life. That everything that I do, if I compartmentalize my religion, that's a problem. Right? If I believe that it's okay for what I do because I'm X. So when I'm in the shul, or when I'm in the, you know, and I think, you know, COVID has made us realize we don't need the walls of a Beis Medrash to tell us when and how to be Jewish. We could do it wherever we are. But if we compartmentalize and we act in a certain way or do things in a certain way, because that's one part of my life. But when I'm in shul, when I'm in school, or when I'm in learning, I'm different. That's a problem. We as Jews, and especially modern Orthodox Jews, we try to live a broad life where everything that I do is bettering myself as a Jewish person. And in fact, Rav Huttner says he once witnessed Dr. Moshe Wallach. Moshe Wallach was a German immigrant who helped Shaarei Tzedek. He founded the Shaarei Tzedek Hospital and it was about to be a surgery. And Dr. Wallach asked the patient for his name so he could daven for him. So Rav Huttner asked this student who wrote the letter, was Dr. Wallach leading a double life because he's davening, but he's also doing the surgery? Of course not. For Dr. Wallach, human effort, medical initiative doesn't contradict the fact that he believes in HaKadosh Baruch Hu. They're not working against each other. They're working for each other. Being a Jew in the modern world means we have a lot of components to who we are. We have work, we have spouses, we have friends, we have children, we have grandchildren, we like to do things, we play tennis, we play golf, we play cards, we play mahjong, whatever it is. And the danger is when we compartmentalize our lives and we say to ourselves, either implicitly or explicitly, I have two separate personas. I have two separate personas. It's just the way that it is. My religious persona and my, you know, other persona. Right, there's the leap tag you see in shul, but there's a separate one when I'm doing something, you know, when I'm at home or I'm on the computer, and that's a double life. Right, the Gemara in Brachos tells us that when you extend the word of Echad in Shema, you merit an extended life. So the simple interpretation means I extend the Dalid. Rav Hunter says it's a magnificent idea. Rav Hunter says you extend the word, when you extend Echad, it means I'm including many elements in my life to serve God. Wherever I am, it's Echad, the single vision. And that's something we learn here. The Malachim cannot sing Shira. They're not able to. But the Jews, we could sing Shira. We could understand that we don't live one life. We live a broad life. And we try as broad life Jews to be a Jew wherever and however I am. I am always serving God. So that is lesson. That is the number one is the Jews only felt safe after Kriyas Yam Suf, so then they can sing Shira. And number two is that they felt they took the initiative. And when they finally take the initiative, it is on them to finally say, now we took it, we could sing Shira. And that's Rav Aaron Soloveitchik. It was their, it's their role now. And this idea that represents a broad life. So I'll add one more piece to this idea of what we're singing Shira for. You know, I've shared in the past the fascinating letters between a secular kibbutz girl and a frum Hezder yeshiva student, which you can, you know, I know many of you have it now. It's called Letters to Talia. It was a letter that spanned a few years from Dov Indig, who was a Hezder, you know, frum Hezder yeshiva student, who created this like pen pal relationship with a very secular, anti-religious kibbutz girl who eventually, I don't want to give any spoiler alerts to the, if you don't read, haven't read it, it's an amazing, they publish it in English. He unfortunately is killed in the Yom Kippur War. We have his last letter, but we don't have his response to her last letter. And she becomes religious due to his influence. It's an amazing, amazing book to pamphlet to buy. And he writes her actually in one of the letters, he says, I want to share with you one of the greatest experiences of my whole life. He says, I celebrated Pesach on Har Sinai, right, on Mount Sinai. He says, the most exciting Pesach of my life. He says, Talia, you can well imagine I was celebrating Pesach and I was overlooking the Yam Suf and at the Sinai expanses the whole Seder night when we kept thinking, right, I'm the one that's supposed to relive the story. I was there reliving the story. This is what he tells her. And he says, I had a brief stint of guard duty, you know, on the horizon. You could see the lights from the ships of the Red Sea. With a bit of imagination, you could see the children of Israel crossing all the dry land, you know, within the sea. This is on guard duty. This is what he's thinking about. Unbelievable. It's like Daniel Gott has been telling me that when he was on guard duty, he was listening to Shiurim, which didn't make me feel safe for Israel security, but made me just feel good that he was, you know, listening to Shiurim. But he says, I came back to the dining room and I sang this song of Geula. What a privilege it is, he says, to live in this generation. We've come back to Israel. And what this means, I believe, when we're talking about the Yam Suf, so there's a lot of aspects. Initiative, they went in, Moshe followed them. Here's the question. How in the world did the Jews know that when the sea split, when the sea split, and in fact, as you know, we mentioned that this you know, how the sea splitting according to, you know, it was a semicircle, but according to some opinions, like Rav Yaakov Tzvi Mecklenburg was a Ksava HaKabbalah, who lived in the 19th century, a German Rav. And he says, if you look at the Psukim, the way he reads the Parsha, he has a Sefer called the Ksava HaKabbalah, it's a very, very big set. He says, Moshe raises his hand. The seabed lifts, right, directly in front. And the water that was on top of this raised seabed naturally falls down. That's what this, not sea splitting like in the Ten Commandments, that it went straight up and there was dry land in between. He says it rose like a tower and naturally the water fell off. So why does he say that? He says because at the splitting of the Yam Suf, Hashem wanted to combine both the amazing miracles and the natural, to combine them both to say, I am purposefully, Hashem saying, mixing the natural and the supernatural to make it crystal clear that is all through the hand of God. It's all through the hand of God. You know, the Gemara tells us that Chizkiyoh was one of the most righteous people the Jewish nation ever had. And significant religious changes, Bali Tshuva, and he had the potential to bring in the Messianic era. But the Gemara tells us he doesn't. He suffers a stunning defeat. And what happens? Why, you know, in the aftermath, I'm sorry, he Sancheiriv is defeated, and he was appointed, he's going to be the Mashiach. But he's not, because the Gemara tells us, Shalo Amar Shira. He doesn't, Chizkiyoh doesn't say Shira. And the Kutzker Rebbe says, what does it mean? It could mean he didn't sing. It means he wasn't like overwhelmed by the great miracles. Right? We have to live in constant amazement by the natural and the supernatural. By, you know, I was, you know, the famous joke about the guy who makes a l'chaim, and they say, why? What happened? He goes, oh, saved from a car crash. And the next day comes in also with some vodka. What happened today? He goes, today I didn't get hit by a car. Right? That there's always, there's natural and then there's supernatural. And that when I'm thankful for every day when I say moda'ani. Right? So this is Shira. So there was amazing miracles that happened at the Yam Suf. Unbelievable miracles. Whether it went straight up, whether there was two big walls and there was dry land and there was fruits coming down and there was set 12 different paths for each of the Shvatim. But the bottom line is, how did we know that when we walked in, it was not going to crash down on us? How were we assured that the moment it split, right? We look at Nachshon. Nachshon walks in, the sea splits. Done. We know it's over. How in the world? How in the world? If that was me, I would have darted as fast as I could across that Yam Suf. How would I know was it going to come crashing down? Says Rabbi Rimon, we didn't. We didn't. After 210 years of slavery, Hashem comes down in a blazing show of strength and might, wipes out the Egyptians, where the Jews are riding high. And then we find ourselves at the Yam Suf. The water in front, the mitzvah in the back, and for the first time, we feel uncertainty. In our little lived redemption, which has not lasted very long, maybe 7 days, maybe 10 months plus 7 days, the sea splits. But as great as that miracle was, we needed to still be led to the other sides. Rabbi Rimon explains, what we learned at the Yam Suf was that sometimes we find ourselves in conditions of uncertainty. We need to be reminded that the road to redemption is full of ups and downs. It's not just about finding a result, but about ups and downs. It's a message Moshe Rabbeinu has to receive. It's a message we needed to receive. We didn't know it was going to come crashing down. We had to have emunah that we were going to end up on the other side. You know, we sometimes feel like we're living during times of uncertainty and panic and fear. We're living in pre-Yam Suf splitting times or current Yam Suf splitting times. The walls are shaky. How do we know it's not going to come crashing down? We feel like we're in the middle. And yet following God faithfully and worried is okay. Water's raging all around us. That we can feel confident when we watch, as we watch those Jews who held their heads high and they marched through, not knowing what might happen. You know, in fact, Dov Indig, and he writes to this girl Talia in the same letter that he says he marched into the dining room and he sang a song from the 1956 Sinai campaign. It was turned into a national anthem in Israel called Mul Har Sinai, right? And it goes, it's no dream, my friend, it's no dream, my friend, no legend, if you will, because at Mount Sinai, the bush is burning still. And he says, everybody in the dining room is yelling at me, what's wrong with you? What's the matter with you? But I persevered. And everybody sang. And the last line is, the tale shall be told of the return of the nation. back to the Sinai revelation, the walls of the dining room were shaking. And he says, I literally felt like being at Har Sinai. Could there be a greater revelation of the Shekhinah than sitting here, like back in Israel, with an army, with the soldiers, after 2,000 years? And I think this is what Shabbos Shira is about. When we study the Parsha, we have to realize that it is not simply the fact that the Jews were saved, that they sang Az Yashir. It can't be. It can't be that just because that's one small answer, was that we were finally saved, and because we felt more comfortable and more secure, and finally secure, now we can sing Az Yashir. But there's other reasons as well. There's the other reasons of our involvement in this process. We were active. We took the role. Hashem says, enough davening. Daber b'nei Yisrael v'yiso. You gotta go in. You gotta jump in. The ability to live this broad life. To say that we can sing Shira. We can sing Shira. We could see the Mitzrayim drowning. Because we are, as Jews, broad. Everything we do is in the context. We're coming up to the week of Tu B'Shvat. Right, Tu B'Shvat is not just where we celebrate the trees, where we celebrate really brachos. Brachos have like become the centerpiece of education in terms of Tu B'Shvat. When we think about brachos, there is a bracha for everything we have in our lives. Because everything that I do, I want to connect with God. Whether it's eating, whether it's using the bathroom, whether it's lightning, thunder, rainbow, anything that I have, I want to connect that with God. That's a broad life. And the assurance that even when we're in the middle of the Yam Suf, we know with great emuna that Hashem is going to protect us. And aside from, you know, these great miracles, understanding that as we pass through, the walls could be shaky, the waters could be raging, but we know that we have the emuna. Vayaminu b'Hashem v'Moshe Avdo. Emuna means that Hashem will not just do it for us as a people, but Hashem will do it for us as individuals. And that's what it means when we sing Shira. Shira is this elevated, unique, very special kind of song that was motivated by something. And whether that something was our action, something that was our understanding of what it means to be a Jew, this is what results in Shabbos Shira, and something we should think about as we head into this very, very special Shabbos.